Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, where it's my job to introduce you to people from the world of commercial property. We're talking with investors and thought leaders about their experiences of the commercial property world and sharing our own lessons from the last 20 years to give you practical know-how so that you can follow in their footsteps. If you've ever thought commercial could be your next step, but it just seems too confusing and opaque, then you've come to the right place. There are so many exciting opportunities in this dynamic sector, and I'm looking forward to pulling back the curtain and sharing them with you.
Welcome to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, the show dedicated to the private investor, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. We want to show you how to cross the divide from residential investing over to commercial property investing. Through interviews, tips and lessons learned, we share experiences of investing and give you the inspiration, knowledge and confidence to enjoy this great cash flowing strategy. So let's get started. Let me introduce you to a key partner for our storage container business. Wheelbox has over 20 locations throughout the UK and their own transport, which is just one of the reasons we choose to use Wheelbox for our container requirements. All of their products are available for hire, lease purchase or outright purchase, so you can create a balance between capital expenditure up front and cash flow over the longer term. They also have their own in-house fabrication and conversion facilities, which allows them to create bespoke container or modular designs just for you. And as part of the service, the team provide a fully comprehensive self-storage consultancy package to anyone looking to expand their current sites or breaking into this fast-growing industry. Now, I'm really excited to tell you Wheelbox are currently offering a free aerial site survey for you, our listeners. Just quote CPI Network when you get in touch, and they'll create a site drawing showing your optimal container layout. Now that's really useful. Perfect for you to maximise your drive-up storage ideas. So, check out the show notes or simply type Wheelbox into your browser and reach out to their amazing team to discuss how Wheelbox can be a key partner to you unlocking your self-storage goals. Hello, hello, welcome back to CPI Podcast. I hope you've been having a really good week. This is episode 2 of the new mini-series on container self-storage. Last time, I broke down the costs that we've experienced with container site setup and those ongoing operational costs. In this episode, I'm really pleased to be able to share with you a conversation I recently had with James Dale and Tom Williams of Wheelbox, our mini-series sponsors. Their breadth of knowledge of the industry is really fantastic, and I was able to ask them lots of different questions. The two areas I concentrated on, though, were optimising the setup of sites, including those where you double stack containers, and then we talked about the growing trend to fit out containers for bespoke storage solutions and a multitude of other uses, including pop-up shops and multi-storey office buildings. It was a fascinating conversation, at least for me anyway, as I love the container business. So, without further ado, let's dive in. Morning, gents.
Good morning.
Morning, Jerry.
Nice to see you both. I've really been looking forward to this episode because we're going to get much more technical about containers and some of the uses that can be made, both in terms of fitting them out for different styles of occupation, not just storage, but also just the details on how containers work, how you do double stacking, which is something I've not really done myself. So there's some key points I want to get into, but maybe what we should start with is just a couple of introductions, right? Maybe Tom, you could introduce yourself and what you do at Wheelbox.
Yeah, no problems. Thank you very much for having us on. So I'm Tom Williams. I've been at Wheelbox, container sales manager, for 3 years now. Been in the container industry for about 19 years. In terms of what we do in my side of Wheelbox, we obviously sell the shipping containers. We also offer the site surveys, the site designing of people who have new sites, so sites from birth, or people who are looking at expanding their sites or moving into hybrid sites. So yeah, we offer a bit of an all turnkey package, and also here we have our own self-storage site called Woodpecker. So we're also living the containerized self-storage dream as it is. So yeah, we're consistently in it day in, day out.
Wow, 19 years, that's fantastic. Right, okay. And James, hi.
Hi, I'm James Dale, conversions manager for Wheelbox. I look after the modification of the containers. Tom supplies the containers over to me, and I then work with the clients to modify them to their needs. I also look after the product portfolio, so any standardized products that we offer to market. And I also support our hire fleet as well. So we've got a large hire fleet, circa 3,900 units out on hire at the moment. So there's a constant need to maintain that fleet over a rolling period, but also looking to update and put new product into that fleet as well.
Fantastic. Great experience. Right. Thank you both, gents. I think, just to throw in the years, I think we bought our first site that had containers 19 years ago, about the same time, Thomas, you got started. And we just had six containers that came with this building that we bought, concentrated on the building, didn't really pay much attention to them. They were producing an income. They were let out. And it was only a few years later I really recognised actually what a great business container storage business is, particularly when you've got occupants in a building that are, using electric heating, lighting, all these sorts of things. And then there's the humble container, right, with no power, heating or anything, depending on, of course, what you're using it for, James. But in terms of storage, you know, that they're not really, you tend not to put any of those things in them. And they're a really simple business, this sort of storage business, which I really love. But I am intrigued about some of the developments you've been working on, James. So we'll maybe get stuck into that a little bit later on.
Yeah.
So let's just start by talking about the humble container, right? Let's just recap here. There are different sizes, of course, but I think the size that we've used 99% of the time is a 20-foot container. Maybe James or Tom, I'm not sure who, but maybe you could just give us some of the stats around containers, overall what the size is, what they're made of, what they weigh, that sort of thing.
Yeah, no problems at all. As you rightly said, in terms of sort of domestic self-storage, the 20-foot container is the most standard type that people use, the 160 square footer. It's certainly the most popular, and it's also, from what we've noticed with Woodpecker, the general public are starting to fully aware, and I appreciate that is the standard container. In terms of sort of a little bit about the 20-foot container, everything's done in feet with containers, but in yes. sort of cubed meter size, it's 32.6. It's made of Corten steel, which is actually a trademark name for weathered steel. Depending on sort of the read-ups of where you get it from, they're all made in China. It'd be anywhere up to 98% of containers are made in China. There is some pop-up factories now coming over in sort of Vietnam, funded by the Koreans, but China has very much got the monopoly, and sort of that touch, and we will touch upon it in a bit, is obviously how there was such a price peak a couple of years ago, which is still sort of relevant in the market now because obviously COVID and the origins of that. So yeah, the 20-foot container is certainly the most standard. 10-foot containers have started to appear in more self-storage sites now, just for the what I would call the nooks and crannies, the corners.
Yeah, it's the optimization, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. They actually cost more, the 10-foot containers, because you have to yeah, strangely, the work, nothing simple, but you have to pay for the freight to bring them in, so they can't be used to bring cargo in like the once used 20-foot containers. So the 10-foot are actually new. So yeah, they do cost more.
Amazing. Yeah. So really, it's just when you've got a site there where there's a corner you need to try and monetize. Is it worth spending a little bit more on a smaller container? Yeah, Matt.
Yeah, and James will touch upon it in a bit, which is great. We were able to sort of modify the humble 20-foot container to different sizes now to meet that size demand that the market is actually showing. So you might not have to spend that money out on the 10-foots.
I'm with you. Okay, so just a couple of the stats I'd be interested in. What is the kind of maximum weight these things can take? Yeah. And, you know, you see them stacked high on storage containers. I mean, what height can these get to? I mean, James, you've been involved in doing developments with offices and things. I mean, what sort of height can these things go to?
Generally, on cargo ships, they're rated to stack 9 high. I mean, they're so over-engineered for predominantly what we use them for, they're virtually bulletproof. I mean, there's some really random stats, but you know, each corner post is like rated to like 92 ton, which is absolutely tremendous. But generally the maximum height is stacking 9 containers high on vessels and in some storage yards. I've never seen a lot of storage yards that do go to 9 high because localized planning permissions and stuff like that. But yeah, they're really over-engineered. I mean, they can be stacked 9 high fully loaded. So there's a great amount of a tonnage on the actual corner posts. But these things are designed to, you know, for a very harsh life at sea. You know, they're designed for like circa 15 years in a maritime environment, going across oceans, facing, you know, gale force winds and rogue waves and, you know, whatnot there. And when they get to us and we just use them to store stuff in, it's totally the opposite end of the spectrum. So
yeah, okay, excellent. All right, so I just want to cover a couple of the questions that might be more towards yourself, Tom, just about the market right now. Maybe you could just give us an indication of how this business, the sector, is growing for you, because obviously you supply containers for more than just self-storage sites, right? But just, you know, what is happening in that market? What are you seeing in the self-storage business?
So the self-storage business, which I'm sure everyone is aware, back in 2021, went for a complete booming period after lockdowns and going on with lockdowns, with ongoing sort of house movements, stamp duties. Demand was high, supply was very low, just due to sort of COVID factors that were going on certainly around the world. Currently, the market is still where supply is got back to what would be considered a normal state. So in terms of containers coming in from China, it's probably not as strong as we would like it to be, because there has been a slowdown in world trade. So that is really the main drive on how quick containers come over, yeah. Because obviously the cargo that comes into them. So supply is a little bit slower, but certainly stronger than it has been. In terms of demand, not up to 2021 levels, but still extremely strong. It's certainly a market, and self-storage sites is certainly a business that people are looking to go into, containerized self-storage especially, because, and you touched upon in previous pods, Jerry, when you said it, there is little barriers to actually joining the business. Fundamentally, you get a container and you put it on site and then you can let it out. So it's a quick startup, and people are joining this. And what we are seeing, a really, really high uptake, is people who had a building on site and then they've noticed little areas of land on their sort of property, yeah, that haven't been fulfilled, haven't been maximized, and containers are perfect for this. We call them here hybrid sites. So the indoor self-storage is there. The outdoor possibility is now being ventured into. And because obviously it's a quick win, but also you're able to then target the drive up market. So people, instead of having to go through corridors or trolleys and this type of thing with indoor self-storage, people are wanting the drive-up access which containers can offer. So yeah, in summary, the uptake of containers is still on the rise, more in tune with normal market conditions, sort of pre-2020.
Oh, that's interesting. Now I know I've got a label. We're hybrid sites. That's what we
hybrid. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
what we tend to be. just on the market, there, it was interesting to hear you say about the restrictions and how things have changed. And then you mentioned about One Trip. Let's just quickly talk about One Trip. That's basically where they make the container in China, they ship over whatever's coming over, TVs, whatever it is, and then the container is sold off. And that really reduces the cost, because otherwise we'd have to pay for shipping an empty container, which obviously would be rather expensive. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So after the container is produced in China, agreements are made with the shipping line for cargo to be used to the destination required by a company like ourselves. Obviously, there is limitations on the cargo that we ask to be used. So we certainly wouldn't want it to be filled with marble, with granite or anything like this, which is going to damage the container. It's got to be a certain type of cargo. And then it's brought into the UK. Otherwise, like you said, you would be having to pay freight costs, which can, well, 2 years ago, they spiraled up to plus $10,000. So yeah, now they've gone to $2,000. But yeah, that would still be something that we would have to be passed on to the end user, to the business. But fortunately, we're in a position in the UK that we don't have to do that.
Okay, so let's just touch on price. I'm not going to hold you to anything. And obviously, there's a time, you know, we're recording this on a certain day, right? But just where is kind of the price of new containers? Maybe, I don't know if you see the secondhand market, and just where people expectations should be at the moment.
Yeah. So in terms of pricing, we had extremely high, and I would probably go on record on saying Q1, Q2 last year was the highest I've seen. 20-foot once used containers, they were easily going out the door for sort of 3,200 plus from some depots. that's now dropped due to production prices in China dropping. I think really in terms of where the price is going to be looking, around about the 2,500 to 2,600 is sort of standard from depot at the moment. And I think something that listeners do have to be aware of is when we say from depot, the depots are very much based around sort of ports areas, bar, a few dry dock. So there is transport charges or reposition charges on that. But the base costs, I would say yes, and maybe in some cases going down to as low as sort of like 2,400 in a couple of months' time.
Okay. And the second-hand market?
Yeah, the second-hand market, it runs very parallel in terms of the once used, obviously. I would say there's going to be about £700 to £1,000 difference generally in the 20-foot side. £1,700 to £1,900 for a 20-foot second-hand container. I think the only thing to note with second-hand containers at the moment is the retirement age of these. So that the age that the shipping lines are actually removing them from their fleet seems to be increasing almost every year. When I started, they used to only use them for around about 12 years. And it's now notched up to around about the 18 years mark. So generally, their condition is not as good as it once was. They still serve a purpose, certainly. But I'll just always be a little bit aware if you are buying secondhand, try to see pictures or even better,
go to the depot. Sure, you don't know quite what you're getting. And of course, having colour matching, which might be part of your planning need, is going to be very, very difficult. Yes. Apart from anything else, the colour does fade. So you might get three shades, four shades of green, which may have all started off at the same colour at one point or another. So the price is under £3,000 now. And of course, people do have to bear in mind that there is a shipping cost as well, because that's X works, as you say. So, depending on where you are in the country, you're going to be paying maybe £500-600, maybe a bit more, depending on what you're doing. And getting two containers on the back of a lorry is cheaper than just one, because it's the same lorry.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Yeah. So it's certainly something that if space warrants it, try to get them in pairs. Certainly, as a minimum, try to get them in pairs.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Let's move on to sites. So, what I guess we should start off with is just the basics. Like, what are some of the things that people need to think about in terms of restrictions? The whole optimization of site we touched on earlier on about 10-foot containers, things. One of the services that you guys provide, which I think is just fantastic, is taking somebody's site and working out what the best optimized design is. So what are some of the things that you look at when you're doing that? You know, is it transport? Is it circulation space? What are some of the key things that you look at?
Yeah, so it's a quick summary of the site survey is myself or one of the team would come out to site ourselves at the earliest opportunity. We'd bring the drone as well. So we'd send the drone up and get some aerial footage. And then we can also see, in the want of better words, actually the lay of the land, how ground conditions are. Just a general view of the overall area. Obviously, when we're driving to the site, we can see in terms of there's new residential properties being erected. We can then certainly see if there's competition around as well, and any sort of main road signage to be aware of. Looking at sort of site optimization, it's one of those things where I can be at a show at any time and someone can come up to me and say, I've got an acre site. How many containers can I fit on it? And that's great. I can give you a figure for that. And I can say, yeah, you're going to be looking circa 350 boxes. But it's obviously all down to the shape of the land.
Yeah.
So when we get the aerial views, we take it back to the office. And when we don't have a fancy design software. We do it all from experience. We look at certainly filling perimeters first, and then mainly islands in the middle, and then say islands, I'll look at sections in the middle of the yard that we can then start to not only maximize space, but also offer different sizes so we can start to entice different areas of the market. So not just the 160 square foot, the 20-foot containers, but the smaller containers as well, because there will be inquiries for these. Yeah. And then I think one of the key factors, which we've certainly noticed over the last year, is the phased deliveries. So people who are wanting the whole site done, but maybe not having the experience of realizing that if they fill up certain areas of the yard first, are transport vehicles or whoever they use to deliver the containers can't access certain areas retrospectively to then put other containers. So being able to offer that guidance is certainly something we've noticed crucially. And that also fits in with the second story units, because that is something that in an ideal world is looked at the berth of the site to ensure that, that everything is sort of structurally and in good condition to move forward in the future, if that's going to be something to go with.
Yeah, that's great moving on to that, because double stacking, as I mentioned at the start, it's not something I've done. I've seen it done in different ways and sites, and maybe you could just talk through the bits and pieces that people need to consider. I mean, for me, it's the whole access thing. You know, how do you get people up there? And there are a couple of different solutions to that, aren't there? So maybe you could just talk through what site operators could think about in terms of whether they add an extra layer, or whether they're all 20 footers, does it increase the amount of area that you need out front for access? Just what are the different ways to deal with that, Tom?
Yeah, so looking at the second story, people go down two routes. So the first route is where they would use a container as the fundamental. I will stick another 20 foot container on top of my original container, and then they would use set of roller stairs to roll up to that container, open the doors and use it from there. There is a couple of issues with that. You, one, obviously, are then got to be very careful health and safety wise with roller steps. And then also your ground does have to be very, very sort of level and easy to push these steps, because they may be lightweight, but we do have to take everyone into consideration who wants to use the self-storage site. What we predominantly use and we build in house now, and I've got a picture of them behind, is our topper containers. So the topper container is again a 20 foot container which is fabricated to have a 4 foot or 5 foot walkway through it, and then two storage units either side, one storage unit either side, which is generally around about an 8 foot square unit there. So you're looking at about 64 foot square foot that can be let out. In terms of what people need to have this or to take into consideration to have these topper units fitted, planning, I think, is always something to ensure that you're covered that side. Ensure that the ground that the original containers is placed on is going to be able to withstand another container coming in. And something which we can help with retrospectively, but in an ideal world is something that is considered beforehand, is actually the leveling of the ground floor containers. Because the last thing you want to do is start having ramps, big lips between the two containers on the walkways up the top. Like I say, we've done many a site now where we have retrospectively arranged for the top containers to be leveled out to meet the bottom containers and their following container by legs and tilts. But, you know, economically for any of the listeners out here, it's certainly better to do it and keep it in consideration from the beginning.
Get the first one done, yes.
Exactly. And then in terms of access, and again, I'll go back to my background, and I actually only did this background by chance. I normally use a different one, but the steps here are an absolutely great example of it. So we would have a staircase. For example, this one here is a staircase in the middle of our stack, and then two landings either side.
I'm with you.
You can have it the other way, where you'd have a staircase just at the end of the row, and then meet it from there. Going back to sort of like the pre-planning side of it, obviously, if we are looking at putting a staircase in the middle of the stack, you'd want to keep that space there before you put any containers.
You're losing, you're effectively losing two container spaces or whatever it is to get a stack in. Just for those that are listening, you can't see that. Basically, Tom's picture he's talking about is basically a row of 20 foot containers. On top, there's another row of containers, but they have a 4 to 5 foot gap in the middle that's created. And then each side of that container, as when you go into that gap, is then doored, fitted out with doors. James, is that your standard doors or a slightly different set of doors that are on those?
No, they're our standard doors. We have modified them slightly in that they take lock boxes. So your standard lock box that goes on a storage site, so the client can have their own, that put their own padlock on. That's fine. We can supply them as a 12 point lock-in security door, just on a standard keyed double throw Euro cylinder type lever latch. So we it, That's our preference, is to put the lockbox on them, but we have clients with different preferences where we supply them as the standard security door. Yeah. Or, you know, we put Aspen staple on, or, you know, it's pretty much down to the client's preference on that.
The type of fitting they put on there, yes. So basically, this roller container is sitting on, is it a concrete plinth or a whole concrete slab that's there, Tom?
So that one there is actually a whole concrete slab.
Right, so sitting on a concrete slab. So then you've got a set of stairs, metal stairs going up to effectively the middle of the container, and then the walkway runs through that container, through to the next one. And just... again, for just an idea, Tom, what sort of cost are those containers where you've got that subdivision going on there? I appreciate there'll be lots of variables for different people, yeah, but roughly?
You're looking circa around £6,000.
Yeah, okay. And then you've got two units there up top. And they're, are they 8 foot? 7 foot?
Yes, yeah. So these ones here are the 8 foot ones with the 4 foot walkway. And it offers a great solution for people who we're finding are starting to say, obviously land is like a premium to get hold of, yes, at the moment, but their demand is extreme on their current sites. That in sort of thinking the best way to go is the only way is up. So we've got, yeah, to get these toppers containers on there.
That's great. Okay, so what that's doing is basically, on in terms of the external, it's just giving you a 20-foot box or the 20-foot box on the top. But I have seen, and you mentioned, sorry, just to go back to the point you made, you can run a roller access along the front. So it is effectively a 20-foot container. But I've also seen it where they've reduced the size of the container on the top. At least in my mind, that's what they've done. It's not a 10-foot container. It's still a larger container, but they've maybe taken a section off the front to allow you to create a walkway. Is that another...
Yeah, that's a really good option in terms of basically the topper corridor can be moved to any configuration that you'd like. So it doesn't have to be in the center. It could be moved to the front. So the walkways at the front, and then you effectively have a 16-foot unit to hire out from there. We do find from precedent and from a little bit of experience with Woodpecker that people going on the first floor actually prefer to have the smaller size units. A larger unit, say maybe the 16-foot unit on top, is very close to the same size as a 20-foot unit down, yeah, the bottom. So people are going to be more inclined to maybe look at the 20-foots at the bottom, especially pricing-wise. So, yeah, that's the only thing that we have noticed with that. But, yeah, certainly in terms of configuration, anything is possible of how you'd have the walkway and the storage unit.
And if you go for 20-foot and 20-foot walkway at the front, in your experience, Tom, what price difference have you seen on site? So have you seen much price difference at all between the ground floor access versus up a set of stairs?
Yeah, that would obviously depends on the current demand. Sure. So you would consistently have to be checking pricing. I, from what my past experience is, I would notice that you would be looking at maybe anywhere between sort of £40 less per month by going top floor because of the hassle that's involved in it. But obviously, yeah, if you've got such a strong demand for containers and people are willing to go and use the roller stairs, then it's just a case of actually, you know, having that discussion with customers and deciding if you're going to vary it. But I would tend to always try to push for the smaller units on top. I think that is certainly going to increase demand. So people are going to be more interested in those.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks, Tom. And I appreciate that you've extended an offer to our listeners for anybody that wants to have that free survey, just to reach out. And we're going to put some of the details about that in the show notes, so people who've got a site they're looking at can actually get in touch and get some numbers. And do you always go to site? Do you sometimes do it from Google if there's good quality information there? Or,
yeah, to be fair, it's entirely up to the listener or whoever gives us a call. We're more than happy to come to site. Got no problems going anywhere across the UK to do, okay, it. But yeah, if someone doesn't have the time to meet us on site and would like us to do it from Google, we can certainly do that as well.
Fantastic. All right, Tom, that's been really helpful. I think my questions are probably going more towards James. So I just want to start talking about bespoke fit out. My background was with construction, so I was used to maybe porter cabins and different offices on site that come in that are modular, but not container. I think, you know, that is something that there's a lot of sites will use a containerized office because it can all get locked up and everything else at the end of the day. But it's moved on so much from that, hasn't it? The bespoke fit out now is really quite extraordinary. I was down in London just last week there, a whole shopping area built out of containers, box park stuff. It's just really interesting what's going on there. And I just want to maybe to explore that a little bit with you, James, as to what's the kind of the popular formats right now that people are using. The project we spoke about beforehand was an office, but there'll be other developments too. What are you seeing?
We're in a unique position because we have so many channels coming into the business where we get so much diversity in what clients want. We convert the container to the client's needs. So, you know, whether that's we're doing a lot with like plant equipment for like generator housings, compressor housings, ancillary equipment for like water treatment works and stuff like that. So there's a loads of different, obviously in the self-storage market, it's predominantly toppers and what we call multi-doors where we convert a 20 foot into four bays or three bays or whatever the client wants, or we convert 40 foots into multiple bays and put, you know, six or seven personnel doors down the side so that you can access each bay and they're all partitioned off. So your yield in the self-storage market is you're renting out a lower square footage for probably a more premium price. Yeah. For that square footage. But going to like bespoke conversions, we obviously utilize containers for singular builds or modular builds where we're joining them all together. The type of markets we're into at the moment is like health and fitness, like pop-up gyms and stuff like that. Retail, entertainment, you know, food venues, bars. We've created simulated towers for the military so they can do like high-rise firing exercises and stuff like that. So they're utilized across so many sectors in the industry. We cater for a lot of marine projects as well, stuff like the ports as well. The office that we mentioned, that's actually on a port development, which is about a £15 million development. So that's where a new port terminal is being created. So we'll utilize the containers for their operations office. So that was 11 40-foot containers joined together over two stories. So that creates all the mess facilities for the workers, reception area for visitors, an upstairs operational offices, hot offices, a boardroom for meeting. It got a deck area upstairs as well, so that you could actually go and walk out onto a deck and overlook the port development as well. The idea around that was when you're in a container port, you need to see everywhere on site. So visually, you want to be looking 360 degrees around site. So the design of that was uniquely driven by that, where we positioned all the windows so wherever you are in that office building, you have a direct line of sight of where you want to look, basically externally.
So for listeners, there's, you know, you have this vision of, or I would have a vision of a box with a door, but this is not a box constructed with 6 foot and 8 foot. It's basically you effectively remove the walls. You can remove these walls. And one of the questions I did have from a structural point of view was, if you've got a 20 foot or a 40 foot container and you remove the wall, do you need certain supports along that? What's the kind of frequency that you need supports for? Can you actually open these things right up?
You can open them right up. There is precedent to do that. We've done it in the past. We do try to put central supports in because it makes the fabrication side a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So if you typically cut the side of a container out, what you'll find is that the roof becomes like a piece of paper. You'll be able to fold it, like, you know, it's sags and bows because you've taken out all the reinforcement from the corrugation.
Yes.
So what we do, we then fabricate a heavy box section frame, or that could be what we call PFC, parallel flange channel frame, welded back into the structure to replace that rigidity. And we also leave a certain amount of corrugation in the roof as well to help support the roof. So you've got an additional frame, you've got a additional corrugation left in that's then fully welded in. And it's important to note that when we join them side by side, you've then got two frames that then mate side by side and they're welded together on site. You know, you're increasing the strength massively to what you've actually taken out of the container. It's also important to note that you don't just have to reinforce the roof, you then have to reinforce the floor as well. So what we do as well is we weld another piece of framework into the substructure of the container.
Okay.
To keep the rigidity back there as well.
Yeah, because otherwise the walls are even holding it up effectively.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so and on when we're doing multi-story developments as well, what we'll do, we'll place stilts between the containers. Predominantly a container is designed to sit on four corner castings.
Yep.
And that's where it holds its strength. All the load is transmitted down the corner post. But then obviously when you start modifying the containers, you're not reducing the strength of the corner post, but you know that you're creating more flex in the box. So what we then do is that we then prop and reinforce that on site as well when we're doing the containers. So where we've done a two-story and we've taken out the walls of the upper floors, we've then stilted that from to the container below to transmit the load.
Yeah.
And when we remove the wall in the upper container, what we try to do in the lower container is design it so that there's a reinforcing wall underneath it. So you've not got two open apertures above each other.
I'm with you. Great. Okay. So that project you're specifically talking about, where it's an office block with lots of light, what were the numbers comparison, like a percentage-wise, between constructing it with the containers and obviously the speed that it can be constructed with containers, and maybe if they'd used a traditional format? Did you look at that?
It's a generalized estimate going off commercial production rates for standard construction, but certainly that was around about 60% of the cost of a traditional build. So you've got a 40% cost saving. Yeah. But what that also does as well is it reduces the time on site. So there's a cost saving there. So basically that project, we started installing at site in October, about the first week in October, and we handed that project over complete in mid-February.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's a very condensed build timetable actually on site. In a traditional Bedford as well, you're susceptible to weather conditions. I mean, when we installed that, we were susceptible to weather conditions because that's a different type of build where we're not installing the box when it's 90% complete. You have two options. You can do the internal fit out on site, or you can do what we call prefabricated. So most of the fit out is done at the factory. Yeah. With the design finish that we wanted on this project, we did the internal fit out and used normal construction methods for the internal fit out on site. So we got a more of a seamless finish between the containers. So it was like a traditional plasterboard and insulation build where it was then all skimmed over with final coat. So it gives a more seamless finish. So everybody who's walked into that project has said it looks nothing like containers on the inside. And that's the feel we wanted. We wanted it to be nice and quirky on the outside. Look, it's built from shipping containers. But as soon as you went on the inside, you know, you cannot tell whatsoever that you're in a shipping container. But the build of that as well, you know, that the site wasn't ready for us to install until October. So we worked with the ground contractor and tell them where we need the concrete plinths for the containers to sit on. But the groundworks wasn't ready till October. However, we started building those units in June. So we're kind of 3 or 4 months ahead of site. So, you know, that's all prefabricated back at our Southampton factory, basically. So it cuts down a big chunk of the build time on site. You've not got trades on site for a long period of time. There's a cost saving there. So, you know, as opposed to a traditional bricks and mortar, you're looking at about a 40% cost saving.
Okay. That's really interesting. And one of the questions I'm sure people will be asking in their mind is, this has now got Corten steel walls externally. What is the life expectancy of a building that's done like that?
it's like any building. It's how you maintain it.
Yes.
If you keep on top of the maintenance, there's no reason that it can't last the same length of time as a traditional, you know, industrial building. You will easily get circa 35, 40 years out of this, because the containers themselves are designed for a very harsh life at sea.
Yes.
This is in a static, more sheltered environment. They've had additional paint put on, they've had additional coatings, they're insulated, they're not exposed to the more traditional
harsh environments.
Yeah. So.
Okay, and just what's the most unusual request you've had or you've worked on in terms of fitting out a container?
I've done a lot over the years, and I did list a few. We did a retirement apartment for an elderly couple on a small holding. They wanted to retire to a small holding. They got a piece of land.
Yeah.
So I used 2 20-foot high cubes to do them a one-bedroom apartment with a lounge and kitchenette, diner and bathroom. So yeah, that was a bit strange one, but then it was all clad as well. So it looked nothing like a container. By the time it was finished, it had a traditional tiled roof put on it as well. So you couldn't really tell what it was at the end of the day. Again, there was a cost saving and a build saving on that, build time saving. We've done work for TV and film sets and stuff like that, but out of containers. Classrooms, ocean race, yacht workshops. We've done quite a few for military projects as well. There's remote radar stations. You know, the uses are endless, and the amount of diversity you get from different sectors is just mad. It really is.
Just down the imagination. When I think about it, we have got one container that we use ourselves, which has actually got our biomass heating system in. So basically the whole thing got dropped in, connected up with a few pipes, done. That was really interesting. And that sits external to the original plant room, which had a gas boiler in. Mm. And yeah, once we put down the pads and everything ready for it, and it came, Bush connected up, it meant the heating was not off at all for very long. It's quite interesting how that can work. Just pulling it back to storage, though, Tom, you mentioned a couple of times there about different methods that people use containers, with James's department coming in and splitting them up. Just maybe just go through some of those. So you mentioned, obviously, we talked about the ones for going on top, but also if your site doesn't allow very much access from the end of the containers, or there's a quirky bit, you can maybe take a 40 foot and change it into 6 or 7 other units. What are some of the things that you can do?
Yeah, so look at them. We actually turn them as called multi-door containers, and it's exactly what you said. You put the container and you turn the container to then be side facing, with entry from the side, split into separate storage units. Really, because we do it all bespoke in-house, it's to any standard in terms of sizing that you want. I think the most common ones are probably the 20 foot to then split into sort of 4 sections.
Yep.
From there, which can then either have a container door or personnel door as entry, whichever the customer sort of sees fit. These are great for not one space. So there will be areas on the site that are 20 foot protruding out with the doors opening would be too big, whereas on the side it gives great access to that. It's also great, and it's something that we've certainly seen in terms of container sites, is the offerings of different sizes.
Yes.
Not only just the 20 foot containers. I think I think people do need to be a little bit more open to the fact that the drive up storage does also interest people who are only maybe wanting a 60 square foot unit or an 80 square foot unit. And these multi-doors not only offer the great structural stability and security of a shipping container, but in the smaller sizes, cost effectively as well.
Okay. And just from my own point of view, that those internal sections between the units, what are they generally made from? What's the material used for that?
So the partitions, it's again up to the customers. We always recommend a fully sealed floor-to-ceiling steel partition.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's contents is then completely separate from everyone else's.
Yeah.
People can go for removable partitions if they so wished. So areas can be diversified. So yeah. The space can be changed. And some people do go for a more, even more cost-effective option is just a timber frame.
Yeah.
The units that we sort of promote ideally would be steel, fully sealed.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. All right. So just kind of wrapping up here, just to pull on a little bit more of your experience. You mentioned earlier on about if people do think they might go double story, is to plan that in. If they are looking at doing phase design, make sure you fill out containers that are going to be difficult to access with cranes or whatever else at a later date. What are some of the other mistakes that you've seen container storage operators make that maybe would be useful for our listeners to know?
I think the one that I do always come back to is people who have started by starting with secondhand containers,
yeah,
and then proceeding to go on to the once used containers and then having to swap out the secondhand containers because they're either becoming a bit of an eyesore or generally their condition has gone past the point of economical repair. So I think initially start off with the once used containers. You can then select your color and you can select your brand and your signage and everything from that point you can follow it. Yes. And then you can also, in terms of using that branding, it's containers can be painted. They can have logos put on them. Everything can be done that we do in terms of the branding and the sign writing. So that's certainly something to consider. I think ground surveys as well are equally important. And it's not so much that you have to act upon what is underneath, but it's a case of there could be, you'd be looking at something like asbestos under there. You could be looking at when people have used old transport yards. I know that they've had fuel tanks underneath. And it's just something just to be aware of. And like I say, you don't have to action it, but you are then just fully aware of what lays beneath, really.
Yes.
And I think the other side is always just try to keep the planning, keep on top of the planning of the site. So knowing about the phase deliveries, knowing your nooks and crannies and where it's going to be difficult to get containers in, could save yourself a cost of a crane hire anywhere between £500-£700 a day easily by getting a couple of containers right at the end. Whereas if you'd done that at the beginning, you would be saving yourself that cost. I think finally is, no matter how great software can be, you're never going to have a fully manless site. You are going to need some human interaction on the site, whether that just be sweeping out a container, whether that be leaving a padlock for a customer who's ordered a padlock. I think it's all great that we have these fantastic softwares where everything can be done online. There will be customers who want to see a person, and there will be that time that you are going to need to be on site in person, whether that be you or someone that you're employed. So always just have that in your mind that even if the site's 200 miles away, have someone in the locality that you trust to be able to fulfill the needs and keep the reputation of that site strong.
That's a really good point, Tom. Yeah. When talking to investors, I do try and remind them, look, this although this is a really exciting part of commercial property, this is a trading business. This isn't just park it, leave it, passive income. You do have to have some activity in here, or somebody representing you has to have that activity, right? And, you know, you do have customers that leave and don't take their stuff. You know, somebody somewhere's got to empty the container, right?
100%, yeah,
it's not completely passive. But on saying that, there's far less maintenance, there's far less to look after, there's far less details to concern yourself about clients and providing them the right environment.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, you do, like I say, you do need someone to be able to check the containers and do a walk around to check the site is in good condition. But compared to an indoor site, yeah, the upkeep or having someone on the floor is certainly time is a lot less.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. I think that's us. Gents, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I will put your details in the show notes for anyone who's listening who wants to get in touch. It's been really interesting to have that conversation talking about fit out and different designs. Thank you, James and Tom, just some of the stats and things around the industry and some of the experience you've had working with storage companies. So it's been really interesting. Could you perhaps just give us a quick note of where people can find you? Where's the best way of getting in touch with you?
Yeah, I think any search engine, Willbox, type us in. please feel free to contact me directly on my email, which is simply just tom@wheelbox.co.uk or sales@wheelbox.co.uk for any site setups or just any questions regarding containerized self-storage. I'm more than happy to engage in conversations. We're not hard selling at all. We're a family-run business and we look to grow this industry in the most reputable way we can.
Thank you, Tom. And James, are you the same James at?
James@wheelbox.co.uk or conversions@wheelbox.co.uk. As Tom says, we're a friendly bunch of people. It's a family-run business. We still have traditional walk-in customers. They walk up and, you know, if they're in Southampton, they'll walk up and, you know, ring the doorbell and, you know, we'll sit down and have a chat with them. So, you know, that side of the market has not gone away. We're kind of, you know, out the other side of COVID. So, you know, it's, you know, we like the human interaction as well.
James, you reminded me too, just one other last point to make about Wheelbox is, sure, there's the main ports down in the south of the country, but also you have depots and different places dotted around, don't you, throughout the country. And I think the next two, we've got two containers coming from you in a couple of weeks or something, I think, and we managed to source them from Grangemouth, which is obviously not so far from where we're based. But you operate in quite a lot of different locations out of the UK, don't you?
Yeah, we've got nationwide coverage for containers. In terms of the actual dedicated depots, we run from over 23 depots in the UK, so we're never too far away. So yeah, the options are there, and it's certainly something we can offer.
Fantastic. All right, James, thank you so much. Speak again very soon.
Now, let me ask you a question. How would you like to quiz today's guest or many of the other guests we've had on the show? Imagine that. Well, every month we hold a private podcast guest Q&A session for all of the CPI network, and it provides the members an opportunity to ask those burning questions, or those that might be answered a little more frankly when the microphone is turned off. This is just one of the benefits of joining the CPI network. Check out the Get in the Swim membership to see how you too can pose your own questions to our guest experts. There are of course many other benefits to members, including face-to-face networking and educational days, plus lots of online content created specifically by private investors for those that want to expand their property portfolio to include commercial assets. It's a fantastic way to gain more knowledge and confidence around commercial property, and it's great value. So why don't you come and join us by getting in the swim? Hi there, I hope you're enjoying the content delivered on the CPI podcast. Even though it's free to listen to, it actually takes quite a bit of time and financial commitment to deliver each and every episode. Did you know that by leaving a positive written review, you, yes, you, will have a direct impact on the visibility of the podcast? And that's really important, because by reaching a wider audience, it helps our team to continually improve the overall content that we deliver to you week after week. For some of you, leaving a review will be second nature, but for others, it might be a first one. Open your podcast app, pick the CPI podcast and search for previous reviews. And on iTunes in particular, click to look at all of the reviews, and then you'll see an option to leave a written review. Go on, it'll only take 2 minutes and it'll really make our day. And we genuinely read every single one of them.